Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin with John Rurink, Craig Mauger, and Lauren Gibbons. A little later, Lance Benanimi will be joining us from the Michigan Infrastructure and Transportation Association, otherwise known as MITA. We will talk about roads a little later, but we're looking at the big board here of the presidential candidates. John, we just wiped off Scott Walker's name from the list. We're down to 14. And our esteemed panelists of MERS pundits have not been able to predict either Scott Walker or Rick Perry yet.
No. I think we had it all. We were all wet.
We would think that Pataki, Lindsey Graham, Jindal.
A lot of these characters Santorum. We all thought would drop first. I thought Graham would have been gone by now. I thought Pataki was, at the time, Pataki had suspended his race.
The Washington Post had a rundown of the top 10 Republican presidential candidates. I read this over the weekend. I was a little surprised. Who do you think number one was, Craig? The number one most viable Republican candidate at this point for president. Who is actually going to end up being the nominee at this point? They were handicapping this.
Carly Fiorina?
That was number four on the list. They said that they kind of equated her to being like the flavor of the month right now. Lauren, who would you think would have been their number one?
Kasich, maybe?
No, Kasich, I think, was maybe seven. Someone are in there. They had him over the likes of like a Chris Christie or a Rand Paul. They had Rand Paul at number 10. John, who do you think they had number one?
Oh, I'm sure it was Marco Rubio.
Yeah, it was Marco Rubio. How'd you know that?
I think you read the story, didn't you? I think I
might have
read the same story, yeah.
Yeah, and then they had Jeb Bush, too. That was a little surprising. Then they had Donald Trump as three, Fiorina four, and then Carson was six, which I was really surprised of. They had him down the list. I don't know if he's going to end up, how far he's going to get in this. Craig, you saw him last week. What did you think of Ben Carson?
I thought his supporters are really passionate about him, which is key to having a successful presidential campaign.
It's not your traditional presidential campaign, though, is it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it definitely had more religious vibes to it. His faith came up in just about every conversation I had with his supporters on the ground there. There were people driving in from Ohio to see him in Michigan, people driving in from Indiana to see him. So he's quite a draw in that realm of the Republican Party.
Number five was Ted Cruz, now I remember. And the reason he was five was because of the organization, the fundraising he's been able to build up. He has become like the conservative option in that field. And for that reason, they had him at five. And so that meant Kasich was number seven. At some point, we're going to be able to reshuffle and maybe we'll have somebody start scoring some points here on our first drop board. I'm still rooting for Pataki, and that certainly can happen at any time. Going a little closer to home, though, after I read this article from the Washington Post, I don't think it was 5 minutes later, I got a call from Cindy Gamrat, who is out taking a break in between knocking doors. She's already knocked on a couple hundred doors and has gotten a fairly good reception. That was the report that I got. She's knocked on some doors that of some people who amazingly had heard of nothing about what's going on, and they're not sure if they're voting or not. But from those who had heard about it, they invited her in, talked about it a little bit, got her side of the story. She said she only had one person slam the door in her face out of about 200, so maybe that's not too bad, I guess. She's got her lid all printed out and is out knocking on doors. But, Craig, we took a look at this race last week, and it looks like Jim Story and Mary Whiteford are the people we've got to be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, it seems like Jim Story is where a lot of the action is at among Republicans right now in that race. He's getting a lot of endorsements. The former state rep, the well-respected Fulton Sheen in that area. The GOP county chair, Steve McNeil, has endorsed him. So if you're getting the endorsement of the county GOP chair, that's probably a pretty good sign, especially when one of the other candidates is the vice chair of the county party.
Ooh, yeah, that's Mary Whiteford, isn't
it?
Yeah.
It is. And she's also gotten a couple of endorsements, and she's got a huge base to play off of from the last election, which was just a couple of months ago. So she's in a decent position. I think Story is in a pretty good position. There's a lot of people in Lansing who seem to be thinking that this race is going to go to Story in the end.
Let's talk about the other race, the 82nd district in Lapeer County. It seems like in the past when this race or in this seat has been open, there's always been a ton of candidates. I'm going all the way back to John Stahl when he won about 10 years ago. There's just a ton of people in that race, and it was just you know, whoever could get 15, even 20% of the vote, they were going to win. In this one, Craig, I think we've got four candidates who are kind of rising to the top as potential successors to Todd Courser: Gary Howell, Jan Peabody, Chris Tusky, and a county commissioner, Ian Kemp.
Yes, is that right? That's right.
Yeah. All right, I pronounced the name right today.
Yeah, this race is a little different than the 80th race, where I think you have two people who kind of easily rise to the top alternatives to the former rep. There it's Gam, right here it's Courser. I think in this race there's a lot more people who could potentially take the crown of winning the seat. You've got Gary Howell, who's a former candidate who's really well known in the district, ISD board member, Jan Peabody, the county GOP chair, and you have Chris Tusky, a newcomer to politics who has the endorsement of the well-liked former state rep, Kevin Daly. You've got an elected county commissioner. So there's a lot of different ways this race could potentially go. From what I'm able to gather, it sounds like Gary Howell's got the biggest name in that race. Peabody is right there, though, as well, because she just wrapped up a race in this seat. So those are probably the top alternatives to Courser right now, those four.
And of course, Gary Howell has run against Courser before and basically got twice as many votes as he did when they ran in the race where Kevin Daly was the successful candidate. That would have been, what, 2008, right? 2008.
Yeah,
it would have been 2008, when Howell ran and came in second place in that race. And Peabody just got done, and really that race was really close between her and Todd Courser. That wasn't a slam dunk either. So
now, talk a little bit about the two districts in terms of, let's assume hypothetically that both Courser and Gamrat get through the primary. What do the generals look like, and what do you think the odds of them going further if they got through the primary are?
Well, that's a key difference in these districts. The 80th Gamrat's district is extremely Republican. You talk to Democrats and they'll say basically if Gamrat wins, we probably can't even give her a real challenge in that seat. I think they've kind of written that seat off for all intents and purposes, that if Gamrat wins, she would then become possibly the House member, whether she gets seated or not, I guess would be the next question. But in Courser's seat, I believe in 2014, the Democrat there got 44% of the vote. And I even had one Republican lawmaker tell me recently that if Courser is the nominee, he thinks the Democrats will win the seat.
Well, and the Democrats are putting up their candidate from 2014, and somebody who was a pretty decent candidate.
If she can get through the primary. It's a three-way Democratic primary as well.
Right. Margaret
Guerrero de Luca.
So we'll keep an eye on her and see how she's able to advance. And who knows, though? I would put the odds of Courser winning that race about, what, 10%, would you say? 10, 5%? I mean, it's the same old stuff that he's putting out there. I mean, you got the same email I did. It seemed like the same old stuff. And, you know, you watched him get beat up by Charlie LaDuff on Let It Rip. He just doesn't seem to... It seems like the shtick's kind of worn off a little bit.
Well, if you read the House Business Office investigation, he spent a lot of time in the last months preparing for this election. Might give him somewhat of an advantage.
Well, that's a way to look at it. I mean, he's going to need all the help he can get over there. I'm not giving him a best shot here of winning, but whoever gets elected, they may have an opportunity here to vote on a roads package, and we're going to talk to Lance here in just a couple minutes. But it would seem, if you take a look at the big things still on the plate for this legislature for this year, if the governor wants to get some type of solution in place for Detroit Public Schools, the energy package is going to require, in the end, the input of leadership. This roads thing has to be shoved off the table. Don't you agree, Lauren?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the energy talks go, it's just been the wheels keep spinning while everybody gets their testimony in. But it's been very similar conversations for about, you know, the last month and a half, pretty much the whole summer. They've been working on it the whole summer, and he's given everybody who wants to comment the place to comment. But I don't really see it getting very far until, you know, the elephant in the room is addressed.
And the elephant in the room being?
Roads.
And the roads are getting addressed. And this is, John, this is really the first time for these batch of leaders to work together when we're talking about Grimal with this new group of leaders with Meekoff and Cotter and Jim Ananick. This is their first test case. And it would seem like they want to get this off the table before they can move on and address some of the other big ones as well.
I would think so. The other thing you got to remember, too, is let's say you let it slip until Christmas and then you don't get it done before Christmas. I think it's going to get progressively harder to get it accomplished next year, because we have that long wait up till the first or second Wednesday in January when they come back to session, and then there's usually nothing going on, and you're all of a sudden you're not that far away from the hyper-political season we're going to have next year in the House. So it's going to make it that much more of a difficult vote. I would think you'd want to get it done sooner rather than later.
Well, and I would think they want, and sooner, Craig, I would say is October, wouldn't you? I mean, before the hunting break.
Yeah, I had someone, a lawmaker, tell me the last week that they thought it needed to be done by mid-October in order to get it done, because the election season seems to be starting earlier and earlier every cycle. And if you look at 2016 right now, the House Democrats have basically gotten most of their candidates ready to go. So it seems like maybe this election season is starting a little earlier than previous cycles.
Well, and we also know from lame ducks, and this isn't necessarily a lame duck at the end of the year here because the term continues, but it seems like they always try and save these big issues for the end of the year, and there's always one thing that they can get accomplished. And I don't think they want that thing to be roads again. They want to get that solved earlier so we can do one of these other big things, DPS, Detroit Public Schools. If there's anything that can be reached there, they haven't even really touched that much. And I think energy, the energy package, in the end, they're going to have the leaders come out, sit down with the governor, and kind of work things out, even though it seems like everybody's, unless you're the Democrats, are starting to agree on something as far as what this final energy package is going to look like. I think they're all going to be ending up in about the same place. Joining us now is the lobbyist from the Michigan Infrastructure and Transportation Association, Lance Benanimi. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Yeah,
thanks for having me, Kyle.
So how long have you been with MITA now?
It's been almost 4 years now. I started in October of 2011, and yeah, it's been a fun 4 years.
Fun is one way to look at it. You were with the Licensed Beverage Association.
Yeah, I was with the MLBA for 7 years. I was their government affairs director for 3.5, and then their executive assistant or executive director for 3.5.
So you took on this role about 4 years ago, right when the road funding debate really started ramping up, didn't you? I mean, hasn't every day since then kind of seemed like Groundhog's Day to you?
It certainly has. And yes, you're exactly right. In October of 2011, Governor Snyder came out with this special message on infrastructure, recommending that we put in at least $1.2 billion more in our roads and bridges on an annual basis. And then we continue to talk about that $1.2 billion for every year, come up with different solutions. And yes, there's some repetitiveness, no doubt, in the legislature.
Is it the same song that wakes you up every morning? That Sonny and Cher song?
It's not to that point, but certainly I wake up most mornings thinking, okay, what am I doing different today?
We had a Groundhog's Day edition where we played the Sonny and Cher, I Got You, Babe. Dun, 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 dun. So you've probably heard everything now, haven't you? I mean, tell me some of the solutions that people have come up to you with.
Yeah, you know, and really, to fund our roads and bridges throughout our entire country, it's in user fees. Gas tax increases, registration fee increases, toll roads. But yes, this legislature and previous ones have come up with some unique ideas. Obviously, Proposal 1 was a unique idea, raised the user fees, but also raised the sales tax. We've heard get rid of the sales tax on motor fuel, which is probably our biggest public policy problem that we have that doesn't go to roads. We've heard, you know, sales tax on services. We've heard corporate income tax increases. We've heard, obviously, from most conservative Republicans, just rededicate money from the existing budget. So there are a lot of ideas out there, but really, throughout our entire country, user fees are typically used to fund our roads.
So when you meet with new lawmakers, and you meet with them all the time, how often do they just kind of pitch their ideas to you? Is that a pretty common occurrence?
Yeah, they have new ideas. They have different ideas. And I think that's probably where we struggle the most. You have 107 now different opinions in the House. You have 38 different opinions in the Senate. A governor has his own opinion. And, you know, it's making sure that you get the right blend of those different opinions. But, you know, again, I think there are common themes on how we want to progress. And that is, you know, increasing those user fees we haven't increased in 30 years almost now.
So when you meet with lawmakers, how difficult is it with term limits and that you seem to probably be having the same discussion over and over again?
Well, this year was a little different. And because we were so focused on Proposal 1, we did very little lobbying with the legislature up until May 5th. Mm. So this year was a tad different. Outside of meeting with leadership and outside of meeting with the Transportation Committee members, we did not get around to a lot of that education process. But since then, we are continually educating. But I don't think it's a surprise. I don't think that there's a lot of lawmakers, if any, who don't think we need to invest more in our infrastructure. So that portion, I think, MITA has done over the last 10 years such a good job of educating that I think we're at that point where it's common knowledge we need more money.
And that is something that you can obviously take to the lawmakers. You don't have to convince them necessarily that you need the road money, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is reflective on some of the general fund money that previous legislatures have put in. They have put in over the last 4 years over $1 billion more. Prior to that, they didn't put any general fund money in. So I think that's a key sign that they know we need to invest more. They just can't come to a deal on how we invest long term.
Talk about Proposal 1. May 6th, what was it like at MITA?
Well, I was hopeful to take a little bit of a break and sleep in that morning. Unfortunately, we started getting rumors very early that the House was working on a new plan. Wasn't a surprise that they had Plan Bs in place, or at least some discussion topics. So it was back to work. May 6th was back to work, just like it was in December, lame duck. We were frustrated with the process. We didn't pick Proposal 1. It wasn't something that we put together, but we got over it that night, and the next morning we went to work on trying to do our best to properly invest in that proposal and raise money for it.
May 5, the day of Proposal 1, did you really think it was going to pass?
You know, we had to be optimistic throughout the whole campaign, and you know, whether or not I actually internally thought about that, there was no question we were going to go into May 5th with a positive look and a positive, we're going to win this sucker. So, no, absolutely, we went into it 100%. Now, you know, again, playing devil's advocate or looking back, we got 19%. So, you know, we obviously had concerns and doubts at times. But, you know, again, if the road community wasn't going to be positive, then no one was. And we had to give it our all effort.
And because of that all effort, we're still talking about this here, right? I mean, we could be talking about Detroit Public Schools, we could be talking about an energy package, but it seems like the legislative leaders have decided that this is the issue that they're going to make their first consensus as a unit over, and that's got to be positive.
Absolutely. I've had discussions with a lot of people on what Proposal 1 actually said by the outcome. And, you know, I think it said a lot of things. I think it said that the public wants a road-only package. They want to work on the roads. They don't want to work on other things in this discussion. They want the legislature to do their job. They don't want another ballot initiative. And they want it in a very concise, simple way of looking at it. They don't want a convoluted proposal where it's hard to understand. So I was excited that the legislature came back to work right away and focused on the roads. And I think that's what legislators have heard since, is that go back and do your job, but let's fix the roads.
The main point that you guys probably have to be stressing with these lawmakers is to approve whatever the quadrant or the leadership come up with. But we really don't know what that is yet, do we?
We don't. Again, we continue to hear very positive things coming out of quadrant meetings. I've actually joked a little bit about it. It's been less information than in prior administrations or in prior legislative leaders, which I see as a positive thing. I think that they're keeping the information close to the vest, and they're keeping some of those areas until they have some sort of final agreement to themselves. And I think that helps in a lot of different ways, but it also helps them focus rather than have other, you know, arenas or other areas influence their decisions.
How do you not lose hope here, though? Because when you take a look at, there have been meetings since May, and we hear the same thing coming out of these quadrant meetings. Oh, we had more discussions, and they were all positive. I mean, it gets so repetitive, you almost just, it's almost like a reflex. Like, is something positive really happening here?
I mean, I can't imagine that they're only talking about the same thing over and over again. They, you know, if they continue to meet, they've got to be meeting on something. And so, you know, we stay positive that they're still talking. You know, we've been in situations where they just stop conversations for 4 weeks, and that's a negative. Mm-hmm. We have also been, you know, where I've said we haven't heard a lot from the quadrant in terms of details. I also haven't heard the blame game that I used to hear in the past from each leader. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very positive that they're not coming to us and trying to push the blame on some other chamber or some other quadrant or some other party. They're actually all working together, and they all continue to say it's been positive and that they believe that all five in the room are in genuine good faith. They're in genuine good faith.
So if we get a road solution and we are able to invest, I know, now you're kind of laughing. So if this happens here, $1.2 billion, but at what point was it like, well, geez, it's actually now it's really 1.3 or it's really 1.4. And does this kind of become a problem?
Well, I certainly, and I think, and I hope that every roads package that they're talking about has some sort of inflationary increase to it. I think that's important because I think you're absolutely right. Now, when I got to MIDA, it was $1.2 billion. We've had reports since then that have gone all the way up to $2.2 billion. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it depends on the goals that the legislature set in terms of pavement quality, and it also depends on how long-term they want to have this. We've also heard of having a phase-in approach where we can easily phase in, but we've also heard of sunsetting some things so we can reanalyze this in 10 years. All things that I think are important to look towards the future. That was one of the probably biggest problems we had in the 1997 package, is it had no inflationary increase, and we're stuck on the 19 cents per gallon.
And here we are nearly 20 years later, and we're still debating the same thing.
Yeah, we are. We are. And we're hopeful we're not debating it 20 years from now. And I think that's what I think legislative leaders are being aware of is, you know, how do we make a long-term solution?
Before I let you go here, can you give us an update on what's going on the federal level with their gas tax situation?
Yeah, right now they are working on a six-year long-term plan, and the Senate has passed that plan, but it did not include a gas tax increase. Right now the House is considering what's called repatriation, which is an international tax to bring corporations in America who have gone overseas, who have invested some of their monies overseas, to allow them to bring some of that investment back, but tax them, give them some tax reliefs for the initial bring back, but then tax them later. Rand Paul is one of the ones leading that on the Ways and Means Committee, and we're hopeful that they come up with a six-year or a five-year plan rather than just another six-month extension. And I'll tell you, even at a flat rate on the federal level, a long-term six-year plan gives more security that funding will be there for the next 6 years. And that gives departments in Michigan the security. It gives my guys the security to invest in employees, invest in their equipment. So we're just looking for, even at just basic inflationary increases, just a long-term plan right now.
Lance Bienemy, he is the chief lobbyist over at MIDA. Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Kyle.
Lance Bienemy.
Yes.
Lance Bienemy. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. You would think this guy plays on my softball team. I can pronounce his last name right.
Special outtakes.
Kyle tries to pronounce last names. Always an adventure. Thanks to Lauren Gibbons for making sure that we had the spelling right. Craig for giving me a funny look when I said his name wrong the first time. And John, where are these candy apples showing up? Where are these candy apples popping up in the break room? What are these things doing?
Well, Michelle, my wife, went up to take them to the tailgate this weekend and forgot them, so here you go.
How does this impact our dental plan?
Probably not well if you don't brush your teeth.
Yeah, you're trying to push a second one on me. I already had the one. I don't think they count as two fruit servings, John. I really don't think that makes sense.
They're each half an apple, so you're good. So we can get servings of fruit. Gotta get your 8 servings of fruit and vegetables every day, right?
While MERS is going to be being checked in for our diabetes level, the rest of you can enjoy the rest of your day. I'm Kyle Malin. Take care. Under pressure.